Conway, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Sean Conway and I represent the appellant, Ray Glatt. This is a unique post-conviction appeal because it involves the direct question of whether a defendant's due process rights are violated by an improper jury instruction concerning sudden moral manslaughter. Here, in 1999, Gray Glass was convicted of second-degree murder, stemming from an incident involving his boss at his place of work. There was evidence in the record that there may have been a sudden quarrel between the two before Glass shot and killed the victim in this case. But the jury was instructed that a sudden quarrel for purposes of manslaughter is an unintentional crime, whereas second-degree murder is the only intentional crime. And therefore, Glass was convicted of second-degree murder. As this court is well aware, since Mr. Glass's conviction in Smith and Trice in 2011 and 2012, this court has held that sudden quarrel manslaughter, as it's defined by statute, is in fact an intentional crime, and that any holdings to the contrary prior to those cases was just plain wrong. What makes this case particularly unique is that it is the first time this court will directly address the question of whether or not Smith and Trice should apply to Mr. Glass's case, not in an ineffective assistance of counsel fashion, because of course counsel couldn't have been aware of the law change back in 1999, and this court has ruled already on that issue, not in the statute of limitations context, whereas we're trying to go outside of the statute of limitations, we're trying to hold the statute of limitations. This court has already ruled that that's not applicable because this is not a new constitutional claim. But directly, head-on, the meat of the substantive issue, is there a due process violation as it applies to Mr. Glass here?
And well, was his instruction that was given, the instruction given at the time of the trial, a correct statement of the law at that time?
It was a correct statement of the law at the time, which has since been moved to the...
and so we've changed what we consider now the definition of manslaughter, but at the time he was tried, manslaughter was a non-intent crime, and that distinguished manslaughter from second-degree murder, which was an intent crime.
Which was an error, that's correct.
Well, but at the time he was tried, that was the law.
That's true, but this court, in nearly identical circumstances, in collateral review, on post-conviction review, have reversed cases for constitutional infirmities such as this in jury instructions. I've cited the cases of White and Ryan in my briefs. That's a 1996
what's
case.
What's the constitutional infirmity if the instruction given at the time of the trial was time of the crime was correct? What constitutional infirmity exists?
The constitutional infirmity is that all of the essential elements of intent were not defined before the jury. If jury instructions are
intent wasn't an element of second degree or of manslaughter at the time he was tried.
And yet that was in plain contravention to a plain reading of the statute of sudden quarrel manslaughter. In other words, in Smith and Trice, this court ruled that they were just plain wrong about what sudden quarrel manslaughter is. It is an intentional crime. And this court has held in State v. Burleson, and particularly in State v. Redmond, that when we were wrong in this line of cases, and if this court is aware, State v. Burleson is the case that essentially said Jones was wrong. It's the parent case of the sudden quarrel manslaughter issue that we're talking about today. Jones was wrong. We read malice into the statute of second-degree murder. It was wrong, and therefore it was plain error for us to find this way, and it's retroactive. We need to go and look back at cases where this constitutional infirmity took place. White and Ryan, as I mentioned before, were 1996 cases that were under the pre-Burleson but Jones line of cases where there was a conviction, there was a direct appeal and an affirmation, and then on post-conviction review, this court said that malice wasn't read into the second-degree murder jury instruction because we were just plain wrong about our interpretation of what second-degree murder was.
Let me back up just a little bit. You said intent was not defined in the jury instructions.
Yes, and by that I mean the jury wasn't given a full picture of what intent actually was.
So jury instruction 14 did describe intent, but your observation is really that it was not associated with sudden quarrel. Is that what
correct.
You mean to say?
That is correct. It's okay. That if jury instructions are a roadmap, The jury was presented with two roads as it applies to intent, the sudden quarrel manslaughter road and the second-degree murder road. But there was a do not enter sign in front of the sudden quarrel manslaughter road because the jury was specifically instructed that it wasn't an intentional crime.
So we have said, with respect to Ronald Smith, we said in, isn't this correct, in William Smith, it's not a constitutional rule.
Correct.
And in Harrison, we said it's not a constitutional rule. And you say it is a constitutional rule?
No, Justice Miller-Lerman, not at all. It is correct that this is not a new constitutional rule. However, it is a new substantive rule that must be applied retroactively. And the court said specifically that in State versus Roland or Ronald Smith, that while it is not a new constitutional rule...
And we said it's a new substantive rule?
That is correct. In that case, it was specifically stated that...
I'm sorry, in what sense?
In the sense that what it does is it takes a statute, as Justice Wright was just describing, it takes a statute and narrows its terms. It takes what was an unintentional crime and creates an intentional crime. So as a result, this court is aware in the T.V. Lane line of cases, new substantive rules that narrow the scope of a statute by interpreting its terms, such as taking sudden quarrel manslaughter and making it an intentional crime as it was defined by statute, does exactly that and is therefore retroactive and must be applied to Greg Glass's case.
So let me see if I can keep up with you here.
Sure.
So that we're on collateral review.
Yes.
So retroactivity has some hallmarks, right? I think we're in agreement, is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And it would be retroactive on collateral review if it were a new substantive rule.
Correct.
Or a watershed rule in criminal proceedings/procedures.
Yes.
Do we think that's the applicable law?
I argue that in my brief, but I think the more focused analysis, and I think the correct analysis, that really gets to the meat of this is a new substantive rule.
Okay, but you said we already said that in Ronald Smith, so how easy is that?
Well, it's pretty easy, actually. But
did
we
use the phrase new substantive rule?
Yes, but this is the first time it's actually been addressed in the due process context. These cases, and there's been a few of them that have come before this court on this issue of sudden quarrel manslaughter and second-degree murder, this is the first one that directly addresses the due process violation because Mr. Glass's case is so unique. It was filed in August of 2012 before the statute of limitations on post-conviction action was enacted to preclude his claim. It's been pending all of that time. So in terms of the uniqueness of this case, unless there's another appellant or a defendant out there pending on post-conviction who filed their post-conviction motion back in August of 2012 or before, and that case is still pending right now, this can only, I think, potentially apply to Mr. Glass, as it should. I see no other way.
Are you taking direct appeal jurisprudence and morphing it into collateral pending matters?
No, Your Honor, and that's why I mentioned the White and the Ryan cases that I referenced. Those were post-conviction cases. Those were collateral review cases where Jones came out after the affirmation of their direct appeal. Jones came out and said malice was a part of second-degree murder. And then this court said, yeah, we were just wrong. He wasn't instructed on malice during the course of his trial, and therefore...
So
we
from
have
a due process standpoint, what's wrong with acquittal first?
What's wrong from a due process standpoint is that Mr. Glass was denied fair trial and an impartial jury. And that's exactly how this court has articulated it.
I didn't hear the explanation. I heard the conclusion.
Of course, because intent, as it was defined before the jury for purposes of Glass's case, was not a complete picture of intent. Intent was only defined in terms of second-degree murder. So it is disingenuous to say that, well, all of the essential elements of second-degree murder were proven as it applies to intent, so there was no due process violation because we met those elements. Well, yeah, in a vacuum, if there was no sudden quarrel manslaughter that was also sitting out here, so you either have to consider that intent as based upon a sudden quarrel.
So is your argument consistent with Winship, I think, which generally stands for the proposition that the state was put to its burden of proof with respect to every element of which the defendant stands convicted?
This is the first context in which this has been raised in a due process fashion. But what I would say is...
In this state?
In this state.
Right. And so what do the other jurisdictions say when there's a challenge to acquittal first with second-degree murder and manslaughter / sudden quarrel variety?
Yeah, and, Your Honor, I didn't analyze those outside jurisdictions for purposes of this case, if I may finish your question. But what I would say is that it's quite clear in this case that intent has to be defined in two different ways in order for the jury to make a proper decision about what Mr. Glass's criminal culpability is. Without that, it's constitutionally deficient.
Well, if other state and federal jurisdictions have looked at this issue, you know, acquittal first with a second-degree murder and a manslaughter, sudden quarrel on death, and said that, well, maybe it's a better procedure to tell the jury they have the option, but it's not necessarily a constitutional dimension. Would you disagree with that analysis?
I would disagree with the analysis insofar as...
Under due process, I mean.
Under due process.
Yeah, with respect to due process.
Yeah, in the state of Nebraska's Constitution and the federal Constitution, that this is a new substantive rule that must be implemented actively in Mr. Glass's case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wiss, good morning to you.
Good morning. Please report. Nathan Wiss, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Department of the State of Nebraska. As far as the due process claim pertaining to the new rule announced in State v. Ronald Smith, the state maintains that the new rule does not apply to Glass, because this is not a new substantive rule that applies retroactively.
Well, he says that we said in Ronald Smith that it's a new substantive rule, quote-unquote.
I don't believe
is that phrase
word
in there to your recollection?
The language was that it's a new rule, not a new constitutional rule.
Did we say in Trice it's a new rule?
Yes.
What did we say then in William Smith?
In William Smith, it was where you first said that
I think the order is, I'm losing track here of the history, is this correct? Your opposing counsel shaking the Ronald Smith, Trice, and then William Smith in that order? Is that the order?
Went Ronald Smith, William Smith, Trice.
Okay.
William Smith is where he said, you first addressed it. William Smith, you said, although we announced a new rule, it's not a new constitutional rule.
Okay, thank you.
And applied it.
Okay.
Law is well established that when dealing with changes to a statute, legislators' substantive changes to the statute generally do not apply retroactively unless the legislature expressly says so. Similarly, when a state court interprets its own state statute, as the U.S. Supreme Court explained in Danforth v. Minnesota and Wainwright v. Stone, the state court is free to choose whether that decision is going to apply retroactively, as long as that state court decision doesn't run afoul of the federal constitution. As far as this court's decision in State v. Ronald Smith, I read this court's decisions in State v. William Smith and State v. Harrison indicate that this is not a new constitutional rule, but both those cases do say it's not a new constitutional rule, which you read it. It's not a new substantive rule to apply retroactively. So this court's already resolved the issue in our view, and there's nothing about Glass's case that makes it distinguishable.
Mr. Conway seems to be arguing that we really didn't analyze that from a due process perspective. How do you counter that?
Well, from a due process perspective, the only time a substantive change, and we're really not disputing that this is, in fact, a substantive change, I think, in matter of Schreiro v. Summerlin, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that when you change your interpretation of elements of offense, it is, in fact, a substantive change. There's really not a dispute there, but the fact that a substantive change has occurred doesn't mean that it automatically has to apply retroactively. The only two circumstances where a substantive change has to apply retroactively are where, number one, you narrow the scope of a criminal statute, or number two, the decision involves a constitutional determination that places certain conduct or persons beyond the state's power to punish. This court's decision in Ronald Smith doesn't fall into either category. It doesn't fall into the first category because it didn't limit the scope or the elements of second-degree murder or the manslaughter statute. The only thing that decision did was broaden the offense of manslaughter. It didn't limit anything, so it doesn't fall into the first category. It doesn't fall into the second category either. Because unlike the Miller and Montgomery situations, this court's decision in State v. Ronald Smith in no way holds or indicates that second-degree murder convictions that took place prior to its decision are unconstitutional in any way. There is no constitutional problem that's been created there. So it doesn't fall into the second category either. And we would submit that although even if it is viewed as a substantive change. It's not a substantive change that has to apply retroactively. Since it's not in state court, it's to determine whether or not it applies retroactively. We read this court's decision, State v. Williams-Smith, State v. Harrison. It's not a new constitutional law, it does not apply retroactively. This court was free to decide. So we submit that there is no infirmity here. And that Mr. Glass is not entitled to collateral relief based on the rule of State v. Williams-Smith.
Are you aware of other jurisdictions that have taken up the issue where there's an acquittal first format with the two crimes at issue being second-degree murder and manslaughter sudden quarrel, and what they've said about it in their due process analysis?
I'm not aware, Your Honor. I did not look into that issue. As far as when state courts are interpreting their own state statutes and what effect that has and whether it has to be retroactive or not, there is an Eighth Circuit a Second Circuit case that I think is a pretty solid opinion. It's Henry v. Ricks, 578 F3rd 134. That's from 2009 out of the Second Circuit. Can't take credit for finding that. My colleague, Ms. Benson, happened to find that on her own after getting Ash's case out, so credit where credit's due on that. It's a good opinion.
I think we cited in another acquittal first opinion, maybe Goodwin, we cited to Arizona's experience, and that Arizona morphed and said, well, you really should submit this to the jury simultaneously, but it's a procedural mechanism.
Yeah, and I would agree with that in that regard with respect to the step instruction of acquittal first, that it would be procedural. I guess I assume the thrust of this appeal was relying on the change in the element of manslaughter, which was the appellant's basis for asserting that we have a substantive change here. Mm-hmm. And obviously just that premise.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions regarding the due process claim, just briefly on the remaining claims of ineffective assistance of counsel, I won't rehash response from brief. There are three claims there.
Back to due process for a second, Mr. Conway seems to argue that if we sided with his client, Mr. Glass, that there really wouldn't be any precedent to any other cases in Nebraska. What is your response to that?
That there wouldn't be any other precedent. I'm not sure that
this wouldn't affect any other cases in the system.
Oh, yeah, sure it would. I mean, anybody who's incarcerated on second degree murder. Based claim, I would have a viable claim for it.
You're saying that there may be individuals who are incarcerated whose trial was conducted on the basis of the jury submission to the jury on second degree murder and manslaughter sudden quarrel, where the pre-Ronald Smith instructions were used, who may remain incarcerated.
Right.
That would be the universe. That would be arguably similar.
Yes, and then I suppose...
And there was evidence that there was a sudden quarrel.
And it was submitted to the jury.
Right, yeah. There was
on an acquittal first, on an acquittal first instruction.
Right, and then I suppose it would also beg the question, if you decide with the appellant, would your decision in this case be creating a new one-year time limitations for all of those individuals? And
now you're flipping into the post-conviction statute with a one-year fee or start.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Or a new trial statute with new evidence of sudden quarrel.
Right. Or in the event that post-conviction is not available under the common law, or constitutionally. I think it certainly would potentially affect a wide array of defendants. And we disagree again. We disagree that the assertion has merit. I won't add anything further on the remaining claims of ineffective assistance of counsel. Questions on the matters or any further questions on the process? Do my best to answer any questions you might have. If not, we would ask that you affirm the judgment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Thank you very much. That takes us to Moomin.